Good evening, Darklings. This episode of the Paranormal 360 with Dave Schrader is brought to you by Keith, the Insurance Guy, helping you save big on health coverage without sacrificing quality. Call 612-230-5522 to start saving. Welcome to the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader, and tonight we trek deep into the strange and untouched backwoods of the American South, a place shrouded in mystery, phenomena, and danger. Known only as the Meadow, this undisclosed location has become a magnet for high strangeness. UFOs, cryptids, portals, missing time, and encounters that defy rational explanation. Joining me tonight is Trey Hudson, director of the Anomalous Studies and Observation Group, with a background in U.S. Army intelligence and over 34 years of federal service specializing in everything from counter-intel to WMD security. Trey's no stranger to critical analysis or danger. He's taken his skills and turned them toward the unexplained. And now, for the first time, he brings us inside the real story of the Meadow Project. And what they found may just change what we think we know about reality itself. Welcome to the show, Trey. Thank you so much for being here this evening.
Well, Dave, thanks for inviting me. I've really been looking forward to it ever since you contacted me. So I am, as we say down here in the Deep South, rip, roaring, and raring to go.
Excellent. Well, first of all, let me thank you again for your service and work that you've done for our country. When you served in the military, Trey, did you ever encounter things like this, the UAPs, strange phenomena? Was this part of it, or is that something you still can't talk about?
Yeah, that's kind of funny. You know, I get asked that a lot. I was when I was a Department of Defense civilian, I did work inside of the intelligence community on the security side of it. So, you know, security of special access programs, things like that. And I'm one of the few former intel government employees that actually said I had absolutely nothing to do with UAPs. That was not, none of my programs were even remotely connected to that. And as a side note is I actually had a some counterintelligence agents that would support some of my programs, and we would meet on a monthly basis. And the only involvement in high strangeness and intelligence professionally for me is one of my supporting counterintelligence special agents really liked my book and wanted a signed copy. So that's about as far as the interest went.
Well, that's cool. At least you know you're getting the attention. Yeah. Since you've come forward to do these type of things and research this, dig a little deeper, have you been approached by any of the military or three-letter agencies with thoughts or concerns about the things that you're encountering?
Absolutely not. It's, you know, like I said, other than that one agent, you know, was interested in this kind of things and it was really, you know, intrigued by what, you know, what I was doing. I also had another program that I worked on, and I had an agent that was actually a protege of Bert Stubblebine, General Stubblebine from, you know, the Men Who Stare at Goats fame, you know, the former commander of U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command. And he and I even talked about General Stubblebine in remote viewing. And, you know, other than just, you know, common experiences, knowing some of the people involved in it, you know, there was never any interest in that. And I was trained as a remote viewer, not in the military, but much later on. And so it's, you know, it's really weird. It's almost like radio silence, you know, from the government. But, you know, when I tell people that, they're like, yeah, really? Okay, really? You know, no, really, I'm not involved. No, really? Mm-hmm. So, no, it's, no, just, you know, radio silence, just no real interest from the, you know, the big bosses upstairs in the five-sided building.
However, I do want to point out, Trey, and again, maybe this is a reach or a stretch, but you and I were talking before the show, and we were having some connection difficulties, first from my side, and then you assured me, Dave, I know it's not me because I've got hardwired in, microwave technology beaming in. I've got all of this. And then immediately you were knocked offline. That's a strange coincidence, don't you think? That as we're about to talk about some of this high strangeness, that all of a sudden both of us start having technical difficulties, you know, miles and miles apart from one another in totally different ways.
I will tell you this, back in the Cold War CI days, which is when I started right at the end of the Cold War, there was a saying among Army intelligence is the first time is chance, second time is coincidence, third time is enemy action. So, you know, correlation is not causality, but one has to wonder.
No doubt. Well, talk to me about the Meadow. I want to hear about this. Obviously, Utah is very popular for their Skinwalker Ranch. I've had a chance to go and be outside of that property, be on the adjoining property. And I will tell you, even being on Space Wolf Ranch right next door, it's a weird place. And there is some strange stuff going on there. But, I mean, I didn't see portals opening or, you know, bipedal strange creatures emerging from the darkness. We did hear voices. We did see a light in the sky moving erratically and very strange. That was the extent, but I'll take it. That was my first visit, and I was only there for a couple hours. So that's a pretty good introduction. But there are places, and it appears that more and more people are coming forward with locations that are very similar to what's taking place on Skinwalker Ranch. What can you tell us about the Meadows?
Yeah, you know, the Meadow is, you know, one of those places that you just kind of happen to, you know, fall across. I used some of my skills, you know, I learned as a as an Army Intel guy, as an analyst, and I started looking at places that were epicenters for hauntings, UFOs, Bigfoot, and I just happened to discover that there was a geolocation located here in the America's South. So I thought, well, you know, why not? I'll check it out. I started off as a ghost guy, you know, as a paranormal researcher, studied under Bill Roll, Dr. Bill Roll, and all of that stuff. And my eyes were opened of the interconnectivity among the various disciplines of, you know, a high strangeness in parapsychology.
And when you're researching and looking at this, what about the Meadow drew your attention? Was it that you were hearing reports? Was there something else that kind of brought you into it? And then you found all of this stuff unfolding there?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What I did is I looked at a macro and then zoomed into micro. That's, you know, that's just like an Intel analyst. I look at the big picture, then focus in on the small picture. And I started seeing a pattern through databases like BFRO's database, MUFON, National UFO Reporting Center's database, and there seemed to be these clusterings. And I kind of went into it originally as a ghost guy looking at folklore. And then I started seeing the Bigfoot connection, and I teamed up with a deceased Bigfoot researcher, Bob Wilson, pretty well known. And we went in kind of from a Bigfoot perspective. And then all this other weird stuff started happening. And it was a various smorgasbord of high strangeness.
I want to dig deeper, and we're going to do this as the 2 hours roll out here into these type of situations. But I am curious, very quickly, is there any kind of connection? Do you see ley lines, latitude, longitude lines that match up with where it's located and places like Utah Skinwalker Ranch?
I don't discuss latitude or longitude for obvious reasons. Good try, though. Damn good try.
I tried.
Darn good try. Forgive me, FCC. You know, yeah, there are some definite correlations, and I've been looking at those correlations. I actually go into some of them in my second book. I talk about one area of high strangeness that you personally were involved in that I know of. You know, there are some correlations and similarities, without a doubt.
All right, we will dig a little deeper. We're going to find out more about the Meadow. And how long have reports been coming in from this location? And what kind of reports seem to appear first? Was it strange lights and anomalies in the sky? Was it ghostly apparitions, strange cryptids, time displacement? That's what we're going to talk about. Again, open your minds, my friend. I know this sounds strange to you, but when we're talking to people that aren't just hillbillies out there running a still, maybe experiencing things or putting out their own folklore to keep people away, and we're talking to military intelligence, gives it a new perspective. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Paranormal 360. Trey Hudson, our guest this evening, the Meadow. Now, the type of, I guess, activity that was taking place there, how far back can we track this? Are there old newspaper articles from the 1800s all the way through? And what was the phenomena that first started to get attention?
Is in the first part of my book, my first book, I actually go all the way back to First Nations people, Native Americans, in the folklore of this area. And what's very interesting is in the Southeast, there's some folkloric similarities between like Native Americans and the Four Corners areas. Here in the Southern U.S., is the Cherokee have the myth of something called the spear-fingered witch, which was a witch that would go along and would actually consume the livers of children. And she would sing a creepy song in Cherokee, which I don't speak Cherokee, so I'm not even going to, you know, embarrass myself, but she would sing a song about eating livers and devouring children. And you start looking at that through the optics of perhaps maybe a skinwalker, and it's not too terribly dissimilar. You know, it's a soul stealing entity that, you know, haunts, you know, the very nether regions of the evening. So that's those are some similarities. So you start bringing that forward, and in Legends of the Stone-Coated Giants, which some people believe were Cherokee legends of Bigfoot or the forest people. And so then you start getting into, you know, here in the Southeast, we have a very rich folkloric culture coming from the Scots-Irish, you know. So you have a culture coming over with knowledge of the Fae, the Jack-O-Lantern, the Will-O-The-Wisp, things in the woods at night, the Fae stealing children, you know, while you're asleep. So that folkloric overlay laid on top of the existing Native American overlay. And then you start moving into the 19th century. Now we start seeing mass production of newspapers, instantaneous communications through telegraph. And you start hearing stories of like wild men, you know, a wild man was sighted, you know, next to Old Man Johnson's farm. The sheriff formed a posse and saw a hairy man and a woman who ran off when sighted, things like that. We move into the 21st century as technology starts to really, you know, ramp up, and we start seeing organizations like BFRO, MUFON, National UFO Reporting Center, things like that. And you start seeing reports from everyday citizens that are cataloged in these databases of, we saw a giant footprint in this area. We saw lights in the sky. We saw flashes in the forest. We saw balls of plasma, things like that. And what's really cool is we go into this area, the meadow, and then an area of about 5 miles around it, and we start seeing the exact same phenomena that have been reported by people in the past. So, you know, in this business, we call that a home run. You know, that's about as good as it gets.
For those of you that might be new to this and you hear some of these terms and, you know, BFRO, yeah. MUFON, just so they do know, it's, yeah. BFRO is the Bigfoot Research Organization. Then MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network. These are organizations that have been put together to track reports. They take you seriously. They want to try to understand and see if, A, they can get a logical explanation, how many people are reporting this type of phenomena, where it's being reported. And it is key. If you're having experiences, reach out to places like this, because their data collection sources really help us get a bigger perspective and understanding of what's taking place and exactly where. And you can do it anonymously. You can share these things and also read. They've got a lot of their research and a lot of their reports online, so you can see if there's things going on in your area. You don't have to feel foolish or strange for having this experience. You might be surprised to find out how many of your neighbors have reported the exact type of phenomena. Now, the meadow's something new to me, obviously. When you hear something like this, Trey, obviously you're a man of logic, science, you are skeptical, but have a fascination for the big picture. When you go to a place like the meadow, how much of what you bring into it is expectation as opposed to, I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, you know, trying to keep yourself centered and grounded, but also be open to the possibilities of what's being reported there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the optics are very important whenever you enter into any kind of research or investigative endeavor. And you kind of were dancing around the actual mission statement of the Anomalous Studies and Observation Group. And in our mission statement, we talk about two things that are very important during this research. One is the empirical, you know, the data. You know, we bring, you know, Geiger counters and thermal cameras and, you know, tape recorders and directional microphones and all this stuff. And we have captured some absolutely phenomenal, I'm not going to call it proof because that's such a loaded term, but data. But just as important from that, okay, I studied humanistic and transpersonal psychology at the University of West Georgia, so I'm very much of an experiential person. So we also look at it from the experiential standpoint, kind of from the perspective is, if all of these phenomena are not being observed and experienced by human beings, then what's the point? Mm-hmm. Why bother? So we look at it from both an experiential and an empirical standpoint, but to the point that we brought on our staff a transpersonal psychoanalyst, you know, a professional psychoanalyst onto our team that helps us look at the experiential part from a transpersonal or a human growth perspective. So when you put these two sides together and they start meshing up, that's when things start getting really groovy. You know, that's when things start happening and you start opening yourself up to the phenomena instead of trying to fight the phenomena. So go in with an open mind, but also go in with a positive attitude and the results will often follow.
Trey, let me applaud you for the use of the word groovy, because that is also part of my vernacular and I get strange raised eyebrows, but I'm glad to know I'm not the only one.
Well, we're old. So
now when you are looking over the big picture of this, you go out there, you start to investigate, are there claims that seem dangerous? Are people being attacked? Are people being abducted? Are people being manipulated?
Yes.
Or is it just phenomena taking place, like seeing a bear in the woods and oil slick in the water kind of thing, that it's just, it is just what it is?
No, it's dangerous. It's absolutely fraught with danger. Yeah, I would be lying if I didn't. You know, we've had our famous, portal video that was featured on Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. Of the four people that went into the area where that portal was, only two people are still alive. We have a 50% lethality rate of the people that went into that thing.
Now, you say that, though, Trey. I don't know the people involved in that. Mm-hmm. But if we look at, you know, traits, you know, you look at four people, if they're all over the age of 60 and smoking and drinking and lived a pretty good life, you know, I mean, it's not that surprising. But, you know, I mean, are these four relatively healthy people?
No. Okay. No. One gentleman had prostate cancer that was in remission that came back with a vengeance after, you know, experiencing this. And another individual died suddenly of a pulmonary embolism. But, you know, we've had other health issues, and health issues of people experiencing high strangeness have, you know, not only been anecdotally accounted, but they're also now being investigated formally by the Defense Intelligence Agency and other groups.
Wow. Before we go to the next break, Trey, what keeps you going back and looking at this, knowing that there is potentiality of cataclysmic ending for you as a researcher?
Is I love a mystery. You know, I love the big question mark. That's what makes us human.
I do too, Trey. But if I see a rippling opening in the fabric of space-time and something pokes its pointy, you know, toothed face out at me, I don't think I'm going to go into that.
Yeah.
Thing that, you know, there's a good chance I might end up being a Dave kebab. You know, so we'll continue on with this because there is danger involved in doing these type of things, being on these type of properties. And is it the paranormal or is it the geomagnetic principle of the land? Is it just that there are natural things there that could be exacerbating our own illnesses? We'll talk more about that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader. You're tuned into the very best in paranormal talk radio. This is the Paranormal 360. Hey, everybody. Are you self-employed or paying out of pocket for health insurance? You might be throwing away hundreds of dollars every month. Keith, the insurance guy, has helped families and small business owners save 29 to 51% without changing doctors or sacrificing care. One client even said, Keith saved us over $400 a month, and we didn't even have to switch providers. Keith can also help companies as well as individuals nationwide. So call or text, I should say, 612-230-5522 or visit KeithTheInsuranceGuy.com. Why overpay for healthcare? Let Keith show you how to keep your coverage and your cash. Call or text 612-230-5522. Welcome back to the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Trey Hudson. And tonight we're talking about the southern version of the Skinwalker Ranch. You talk about the dangers. You talk about the health issues. Do you think it's more to do with the principles of that place, the energetic nexus, if you will, or is it coming into contact with potential aliens, creatures we don't know about, interdimensionals, that we're picking up and leeching off of their energy that may be making us sick?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, that's, you know, I would be foolish if I, you know, sat here and told you I had the answers. Not only do I not have the answers, I really don't even know what the questions are. You know, that's how strange and other, you know, this phenomena is. I think it might possibly be a combination of both. You know, if you start looking at, some historical cases, like, you know, the famous Cash Landrum case. I really started digging into that for a chapter in my second book of looking at health effects of high strangeness. And there seems to be a correlation between non-ionizing radiation and high strangeness. You know, even so far as I talked about the DIA issuing a report on that, there seems to be symptoms of non-ionizing radiation, you know, with these cases of high strangeness. And, you know,
what does that mean for the layperson or in popular terms, people like me that don't understand what you're
saying? Yeah, ionizing radiation is radiation from a radioactive source, you know, cesium, plutonium, or a electrically generated source like an X-ray machine or a linear accelerator used for cancer treatment. That's ionizing radiation. Non-ionizing radiation, the most common non-ionizing radiation injury that people have ever experienced is a sunburn. You know, it's heat. It's radio waves, and then you start working your way up through the electromagnetic spectrum from infrared to ultraviolet, infrared to ultraviolet into microwave. And what's interesting is you talk about that is you mentioned Skinwalker Ranch, and you said you were out there at Space Wolf with Ryan Burns and, you know, his crew.
Right.
Is some of the people that have been at Skinwalker Ranch, both historically with NIDS and the National Institute for Discovery Science under Robert Bigelow, and more recently, you know, with some of the folks that are featured on the television show, they have experienced symptoms and illnesses that are very consistent with microwave radiation exposure. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go into details for reasons. You just have to read between the lines there. But intelligence personnel and diplomatic personnel in other countries have been exposed to something that causes a illness called the Havana syndrome, which mimics radiation exposure in about the 1.3 to 1.6 gigahertz range. And there's something called the Frey effect at 1.3 gigahertz, where I can hit you with microwave radiation, non-ionizing radiation, and you actually have an audible sound in your, you think in your ears, but it's as the microwaves are actually changing the structure of your brain, making you think that there's a sound. So there's a lot of a correlation between something that looks like exposure to microwave radiation, non-ionizing microwave radiation, and this. There's a very, very, very detailed case with one of the NIDS investigators under Robert Bigelow that had a very serious non-ionizing radiation injury consistent with that.
Infrasound, right? I mean, we've heard people talk about the fact that Bigfoot, in the presence of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, some of these larger creatures, that they're sometimes you feel almost hypnotized. You feel disassociated with your physical form. There is something going on, and some people attribute that to an infrasound that they project, much like an echolocation that bats use or dolphins. You know, there's something that they are emitting. Some people also claim to pick up mental messages as though they're being telepathically put into the people's brain from these creatures. It also kind of shows into effect that many people, myself included, have had experiences with a Bigfoot or seeing craft, and you have this holy cow moment, this transformative experience, and then just kind of go on about your day and don't talk about it, don't really share it. My cousin and I saw that Bigfoot when we were, I don't know, 10 to 12 years old. We didn't talk about it again until my mom passed away 9 years ago. So it's a weird element to what goes on. Do you think that in these instances, when you, I know you said you're kind of a ghost guy at first,
right?
We go into haunted locations. Sometimes our equipment batteries drop and activity peaks. Do you think that in essence, these natural locations that have this non-ionizing radiation work as a battery or an energy source that allows these creatures to come and go, to be seen?
Right.
Or do you think that because of that natural phenomena, it's pulling back that veil and they don't, you know, it's kind of against their will. They're all around us all the time, but in these areas, the veil is thinner.
Yeah. I think you're right. You're dead on. I have learned just through the years of research, not to separate the disciplines anymore. You know, I look at it very holistically, and I think ghosts, Bigfoot, cryptids, UFOs are all different prisms of the same diamond. I think they're all the same phenomena, albeit presenting themselves in different ways. If we look at it that way, is what is the phenomena? And I think I'm in pretty good company when I hypothesize that it's interdimensional. Mm-hmm. And John Keel talked about ultra-terrestrial. The term I coined in my first book was paradimensionals. Mm-hmm. And if you start looking at, you know, some of the theories of how dimensions and universes can coexist, if you have dimensions or universes that are just so close that they don't touch and annihilate each other, but data and objects can pass through, you know, that would possibly generate energy, kind of like the zero point or event horizon of a black hole, which emits, you know, radiation. So it could be that these are types of, you know, black holes or some sort of interdimensional portal, and that's a loaded word, that emits energy as these openings are either artificially generated by some sort of technology we're not familiar with, or they're natural, you know, just like a natural sinkhole in the earth. But think of this as a sinkhole in space and time that we just happen to stumble across, and maybe other entities are using it for their own devices.
You know, that sounds a lot like some of the current thoughts on hauntings. Mm-hmm. I've been beating this drum for the last 19 years that, you know, I always use the idea of a book, that the location we are in has always existed in time and space. It is mm-hmm. just simply changed, right? Like in the movie, The Time Machine, when you see him sitting there, the time machine's not really moving. It's time and space that's moving
around him.
Right. And he's just sitting in a pocket that's keeping him safe through the transition.
Right.
It does sound like, you know, if all these layers of time exist at the same point, things that we think are ghosts are really just us on the page before us or the page behind us. And we're having these kind of time slip phenomena. Yes. Yeah. We have to take a quick break again. Trey Hudson, our guest, fascinating. When we come back, I know you've mentioned a couple of the more interesting cases. Can we get a little in depth in that? And then In the next hour, I'd really like to discuss your research, what you found and the actual experiences that you and your team have been through. We'll do that next year on the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. Trey Hudson, our guest. All right, Trey, let's talk about a couple of the actual accounts that have taken place in this area, especially the ones that you think are really worth noting, you know, maybe the more chilling or extraordinary.
Yeah. You know, it's I've got 10 years of research here, so I'm going to try to, you know, just hit the high points.
OK.
You know, we have the commonplace things. That sounds very weird. You know, the commonplace things we have are orbs, disembodied voices, shadow people.
But when you say orbs, are you saying that you're seeing them with the naked eye, or are they only appearing in video and photographs?
No, we see them with the naked eye.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we see them, you know, see them on video too.
Sure.
But some of the most remarkable things is back in July of 2016, when we really started researching this, is we had set up several teams in the meadow. And I want you to imagine about an 8-acre blue-collar mountain meadow, very beautiful, very, very pristine, very, very nice. But we're there at night and we have our team set up out there equipped with thermal, night vision, audio recorders, things like that. And we were going to have an individual work across the top of a ridge to see if he could flush anything down into the meadow or if he could see anything from his higher vantage point. And on his way to get to the ridge, after we were set up, he experienced missing time, which was very strange. And so he, you know, we all have our normalcy box. So we all thought, well, maybe he was, you know, just not paying attention and didn't realize he got to point A and forgot about it. But what was interesting is when he dropped down off the ridge, one of my teams were watching his lights drop down off the ridge and approaching them to their location. They're listening LPOP, a listening post observation post. And they saw him turn into a orb of energy, a red orb, and move about 100 meters in just a few seconds. And then they brought their thermals back up. Once the light stopped, brought the thermal up, and they saw him standing there. And they radioed him, and they saw the figure on thermal bring up its radio and key back. He went over to them and explained what they saw. You know, we saw you move to a point with the naked eye. We saw an orb. It moved. We brought our thermals up, and then you were standing where the orb terminated. What happened to you? And he said, nothing happened to me. I just walked over here. And they said, no, we saw you move, or what looked like you move, 23 miles per hour over rough terrain. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. I just walked over here. So if we think about it, those were two realities existing in the same place at the same time. That's quantum stuff.
Right.
You know, that's stuff that we see at the quantum level. But what if we're seeing at the macro level? Next morning when Bob, the guy, the orb guy, showed us his GPS, and he always runs a track line, his track showed him being on the other side of a small river and making straight lines of several kilometers. You can't move over this terrain in a straight line. It's too rugged. But there is one way you can move over a straight line over rugged terrain. That's if you're in the air. So what happened during that missing time? You know, and we did hypnotic regression with this individual, and we were not able to punch through that missing time. The psychotherapist was not.
When he came back, were you able to do like a quick Geiger counter sweep on him to see if there was any residual radiation, anything like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, that time we didn't have Geiger counters. We're self-funded, you know. Yeah, so yeah, we didn't have Geiger. We have several now. But so that was in 2016. We went back in 2017, and we did the same thing, had people up on top of the ridge, and we started seeing figures on our thermals. Now, we're very particular. We run our operations like a military operation. Nobody leaves their post unless authorized. And we started seeing figures, human-sized figures on our thermals that did not correspond with any of our teams. We got a radio contact from another team, and they said they were starting to see these boxes or cubes show up on their thermals in various places in the meadow. Once we were able to get over to them, the thing had dissipated. We sent a team over to where the cube was, and on our thermals, this four-person team completely disappeared off our thermals. Their thermal signature was completely masked. We have tried to recreate it. We were unable to. It was analyzed by folks at the Discovery Channel, and there is no explanation for that video.
This cube, can you explain it to me? Was there a color associated with it?
Only heat.
Okay.
It was only a heat differential. It was, I'm trying to remember.
The reason I bring it up is that Scott Castle, who is a National Geographic diver, deep sea diver, he encountered a huge golden cube in the ocean that seemed to stop the light of his flashlight. Mm-hmm. It moved at tremendous speeds. There is a Bigfoot encounter. Two men that were driving in a truck saw this large bipedal character that then, as it kind of crouched down, it crouched in almost a fetal position and then morphed into a golden cube and then took off flying. Yep. So it's interesting that you bring up.
Actually, I'm familiar with that case. Okay. Katie Page talks about cubes at the Clearwater Ranch.
Right.
Cubes at Skinwalker Ranch. Cubes everywhere. There's something mysterious about cubes. So
not the most aerodynamic shape either.
It's
ovals or circles.
It's not. But, you know, the old alchemist, they had something they called the prima materia, which was the prime material of all matter. And do you know what it was represented by? A cube, a black cube.
Wow.
So we had these cubes. And while we had this team approaching this cube and we're filming it, off to our right in a small copse of trees, our thermals picked up two mysterious figures watching us that did not correspond to any of our team members.
Could you ascertain the height?
Yeah, probably, you know, maybe 1.75 meters tall, you know, maybe, you know, half a meter wide, you know, 0.75.
For those of us who live in the United States, Trey, and are not part of the military, how tall does that equate to?
Maybe about 6 foot, maybe about 18, 20 inches wide.
All right.
I'm sorry. I write my reports.
I know. I like it when we set up our interview. You're like, yeah, and give me military time. I have to sit there and kick off shoes to count to know where I'm at. But I appreciate that. Fascinating stuff. We've got so much more to discuss. When we come back, I want to start digging into your boots on the ground experiences, the type of things that are taking place, what you can actually say. Dave, this is what I have witnessed. This isn't just secondhand information. This isn't information from, you know, collected from other sources being told to me. But this is what we found, and that you started talking about that with this segment. So we'll dive into that. And that's just the beginning. In this first hour, we've scratched the surface of the meadow, a place where reality seems to fray the edges and the impossible becomes unavoidable. Trey Hudson and his team didn't just investigate. They experienced, and some of them never walked away the same. In hour two, we're going to dive deeper into the supernatural and personal accounts, unexplained technologies, and jaw-dropping anomalies that that haunt this hidden southern hotspot. It's crazy. It's fascinating. It's interesting. And if there are topics like this you would like to hear, you can always email me, dave@paranormal60.com. If there's a topic you think we should cover, I want to hear from you. Dave@paranormal60.com. Stay tuned. More coming your way right after this.